It's good to be with you this morning. I was not in worship last week because I took some vacation time. And so it was kind of funny because when I came into church this morning, Lori gave me a big hug and she's like, "Where have you been?" So I had like inadvertently titled my sermon, I guess, very appropriately. "It's so good to see you." That is always the way you want to be greeted, right? You know, like, "Oh, it's so great to see you. We've missed you." And that is how I feel when I haven't seen you in worship. I know that life is always taking us here and there and everywhere, and I hope that when you come to Crosswinds, whether it's been a week, a month, a year, or 10 years, that you get that same feeling from this community of faith and from God of just delight in your presence. So as I've been wrapping up our time and getting transitioned from vacation back into work, I wanted to just share. Our family just took a couple days up at Itasca, and we had a great time. And some of you know that my husband is also a pastor, which is why you don't see him and my son here on Sunday mornings, because they're at a different church. And my husband and son and I, we had a great trip. But when we came home, he just kind of shook his head and he said, "We should never take vacation in August ever again." And as for those of you who are teachers can understand, sometimes, you know, going on vacation right before the start of a big school year is not always the most pleasant when you come back. But, you know, if we're honest with one another, there's always going to be some kind of disruption and disorientation whenever we take time off. But it is important that we take time off, not just for vacation, but also for Sabbath rest. After all, God does put that as one of the Ten Commandments, that we should honor the Sabbath and take rest. Like, you know, God, by side note here, that's right up there with don't kill people, okay? Rest and don't kill people. These are equally, you know, like, the, I mean, I say that kind of flippantly, but like God says it's important for you to make sure that you have this time for rest and recreation and renewal. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, and especially since I'm guessing that some of you have maybe been on the road or gone through some travels of your own this summer, or maybe have some wonderful fall travels ahead of you as well. Being on the road, going on a trip can be wonderful and exciting and also can be provide a lot of anxiety or concern. For some of us, when we are getting ready for a trip, there's that sense of that old commercial, "Calgon, take me away," right? Where you're just like, "I need to escape from my life and I cannot wait for this trip." For some of us, when we go on vacation, we power through it like we are going to accomplish everything. And we get so much done that by the time you get back, people say they need a vacation from their vacation. Yeah. Now, sometimes there are seasons in our life where that is the way that, you know, that's just kind of whatever life has before us. There are those moments of you do need the Calgon take me away moment, or maybe you need a vacation for your vacation. But I think it's also for us important to think about the importance of travel and vacation and time set apart as a time of holy recreation. We use the word recreation quite frequently in our language, but I want us to think about the word itself. It is re-creation, right? It means, at the root of it, it's meant to be time where we are remade, where we are put back together, where maybe something is changing. And we might understand that word recreation, recreation, sometimes in how we do sports, right? Like you might consider a sport a time of recreation. My family enjoys playing tennis together, and we consider that recreation. Now, as my son gets older, I find it less recreative because he just keeps getting better and better, and it's less fun for me. But, but you know, we are continually being remade as we play tennis, right? And we're working on things, and we sometimes encounter parts of ourselves that we do not like. Mm-hmm. And then we have to deal with it as a family after, you know, maybe something that happened while we were playing. And we understand that, especially in the work of children, right, of how we play, so much important developmental work happens when we are playing. And we allow our younger children to do that quite frequently, but we sometimes cut that off and say, like, no more recess, you know, grow up, it's time to get serious. But we are created to need that time to recreate, to play, to be remade. And side note to that, one of the things that I found most interesting, especially in my work in youth ministry, the longer and the older that I get, the more I find that students, especially in middle school and high school, enjoyed just having time to play with me and how much they missed that in their life. And so we just need to keep creating those spaces for recreation. Now, lest you think I'm romanticizing recreation as just a fun, pleasurable thing, I do want to reference back that tennis moment, right, where maybe one of, you know, we encounter something about ourselves that is less than desirable, or we are pushed in a way that we do not like, and God then has that space to remake us. And I think if we were to think back on some of our travels and times we were on the road, we've probably encountered those kind of moments, right? Like, have ever any of you gone on a road trip and something has not gone right? And maybe you have said something to a family member that you then later regret? And yet, also, sometimes in the same moment, you might go on that road trip and you encounter something about the world or something about yourself that you never even knew existed, and you come home thinking, wow, I learned this about myself, or wow, I had no idea. I had no idea that Minnesota was so beautiful. I'm not from Minnesota, so I say that like I'm an East Coast girl, so the idea of moving to the Midwest, if you had told me that 30 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. It's been wonderful. And we find these things when we travel, when we put ourselves in an unfamiliar environment. And we get a chance to have God meet us in different ways. And sometimes we only get it after the fact, right? Sometimes, especially in families, you might not even realize the impact of a family vacation until maybe 10, 20 years after the vacation. Have any of you ever had that experience, either as a child or as the parent, that later on the family stories come up and one of the children in the family unit says, I remember when we went to whatever, and you're thinking, did we go to that? You know, but they share this story and something that was so meaningful that maybe at that time seemed really uneventful to you, but had a dramatic impact. And then as a family, you kind of talk about how important that was, or how meaningful it was, or how transformative it was. It had that kind of lasting, like burning in their heart kind of moment, but it didn't necessarily make sense at that time. It unfolded later on. God used that moment later on as the person was growing to see its importance. I think that just like that sense of recreation and God meeting us in new ways and helping us to encounter ourselves in a different way is a good example of our scripture lesson for today. We have a rather famous story in the Bible that is often referred to as the Road to Emmaus. And it's more commonly read the Sunday after Easter, or maybe two Sundays after Easter, pretty close to Easter, because it is the story that then follows the traditional Easter story about Jesus rising from the dead and appearing to the women. Now, in this case, in our story, we have two men who are leaving Jerusalem. They have been told the story from the women, but they haven't seen the risen Christ themselves. And so they are walking to a place known as Emmaus. There's a lot of biblical criticism about where is Emmaus, what is Emmaus, all of that stuff. For the sake of today, we're just going to say they were on the road and they were walking, okay? And we are told that in this particular moment, they're in deep grief. And they're understandably upset because someone that they had loved and cared about had been brutally murdered, and just everything they thought about the world was falling apart. And so it is more than understandable that their grief would be consuming them and that seeing things clearly would be rather tough. Which is why I give Jesus a little bit of a furrowed eyebrow about why he's so rough on them, but that's for another, that's another part. Because we hear that Jesus comes alongside of them and he's joining them on the road. And he just says, what are you talking about? And he inserts themselves into this conversation on the road. Have any of you ever been on a trip where you've just kind of met a stranger and they just like, hey, what's going on? Maybe not so much in Minnesota. Minnesotans don't tend to insert themselves as much into conversation. I used to live in New Jersey. A lot of inserting yourself into other people's conversations in that zone, you know, was very common to just be like, I see you bought eggs. What are you doing tomorrow? You know? Anyways, Jesus is a little bit more New Jersey in this story here. And he says, you know, what are you talking about? And the men respond with like, what do you mean you don't know what we're talking about? And they talk to them about the events that had unfolded in Jerusalem. And they say very, very clearly in verse 21, we had hoped he was the one who would redeem Israel. And they go on to just expressing their sadness and their sense of loss about what had happened. And this is why I say I give Jesus a little bit of a hard time, because instead of responding very pastorally and compassionately, he says, you foolish people, which is, I think, kind of a weird zone. But I think what the author is getting at is he's trying to be disruptive, right? He's trying in his own way to shake them out of their grief and to help them understand things in a different light, because these two disciples had gotten really wrapped up in what they wanted to see, in who they wanted God to be, in what they expected of the world. And because things were not going according to the ways that they wanted it to go, everything else was just nonsensical. And Jesus tries to help them understand that some of their preconceptions and some of their hopes and some of their aspirations and some of their own needs were not actually the ways that God was going to work and the way that God was going to act. And even though Jesus does what probably was the best Bible study on the road, they still don't quite get it, right? Because when you're in deep grief, someone trying to argue with you doesn't usually fix it, does it? Not usually. So we hear then that Jesus has this moment where they're getting to Emmaus and they say to him, stay with us. It's nearly evening and the day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. And after he took his seat at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, but he disappeared from their sight. Here we have that moment, right, that we might expect or want from God, that this sense of shared experience, that gentle presence of Jesus, that feeding image, that just come alongside and sit with me moment. And then I realize God is here, and it all makes sense. That is what I think we all long for in our grief especially, but whenever we are confronted with things that just don't line up with the way we want them to be. But I think that what we really begin to understand afterwards is, it says after that, after they begin to realize that Jesus was in their sight and disappears, it says, then they said to each other, "Weren't our hearts on fire when he spoke to us along the road and when he explained the scriptures for us?" To which we all want to say, no, right? Because if it was, then why didn't you get it earlier? But yet I think it is yes, right? Because it's like when I was talking about those family trips and you go and you do something and you don't even realize the impact it's having, but you're doing it. And then 10 years later, it makes sense. And you realize how important it was and how recreative it was and how much it changed you and had an impact on you. I think it's kind of like that, where Jesus knows that, you know, it might not be until after the fact that it kind of settles in and sinks in, but he's going to go forward and share that with us anyways. And so this day, as we wrap up our own kind of summer season and maybe start packing up our summer leisure or trips or get ready for the new routines, I hope that for each and every one of us, we don't have to wait for a road trip to encounter the risen Christ in our midst. I hope that you're able every single week, every single day, to find those times and spaces where you open your lives to sacred recreation, to play, to be interrupted, to be disrupted, and to let God in, to dismantle some of your own projects, to let God dismantle maybe some of your own preconceived ideas, and to let God be God in your life. Because when we do, when we make that space for God, afterwards we find again and again that, like these disciples, our hearts begin to burn within us. And that our lives are filled with a sense of passion and energy to face whatever comes our way. And it doesn't mean that God will protect and shelter us from trouble, but we recognize and we begin to understand that the Lord, our shepherd, will walk with us even in the valley of the shadow of death. And that with Christ's presence among us, we need not even fear any evil, for God is with us. And we know that we can face the day and find hope for tomorrow. Thanks be to God. Amen.